Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Atheists, agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
The government of the government love. The government of the government love. The government of the government love.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Northern Kentucky University political scientist Michael Baranowski. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney and defender of freedom, Jay Carson.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jay. So, as usual, we have plenty of things that we wanted to get to, but we weren't able to fit in on our weekend show. And so, thankfully, we have all kinds of time to talk about them now, although it is late Friday.
All kinds of time.
Late Friday afternoon. We're kind of running on, well, you are certainly running on fumes at this point, probably, but you will persevere through, I am sure, through other things we have to talk about. And why don't we just kind of get right into that? In fact, it's a story that I think you can get us going on here, right? The Supreme Court and homelessness.
So on Monday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on a case involving the right to sleep outdoors, essentially. It's a case involving the Oregon city of Grants Pass, which outlawed sleeping in cars or on the street or in public parks with a blanket. Now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals had said that this statute was unconstitutional if the idea was if you don't have enough shelter beds available, then you are essentially punishing a situation for which the homeless person or the victim of the outdoor camper, however you want to call them, has no control, and that would be therefore cruel and unusual punishment. The Supreme Court conservative majority seems skeptical of this case, that notion, and said, listen, does this place a burden on municipalities that have competing priorities? For example, under this, in order to prevent sleeping in the streets, a municipality might have to allocate resources to build a homeless shelter, as opposed to, his question was, do you take care of lead pipes contaminating the water supply? Or what if there's not enough fire protection? What do you prioritize? So the liberal justices tended to take a more broader view of the Ninth District decision, saying, well, listen, there, if it can't be helped, it can't be helped, and people shouldn't be penalized for what is essentially their economic condition. So, Mike, that's where we left here. But what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, there are some interesting things about this case, a bunch of them, actually. And I've been giving this one a lot of thought. And for instance, it's weird, right, to have California Governor Gavin Newsom telling the court, hey, listen, you really need to look at this Ninth Circuit decision that we don't like, because his position, and I think this is why this is kind of a bipartisan thing, at least in some quarters, is that because they did an amicus brief, that cities are basically trapped because, well, if you clear encampments, you get sued or potentially, but if you don't deal with the health, the safety issues that may come with encampments,
You're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Exactly. And so I understand I agree with the Ninth Circuit in a way, because it seems pretty clear to me that you can't criminally, and in the end, it starts with fines, but it can raise to a criminal sort of thing if you rack up enough fines, basically, that you can't criminalize a status, right? And I think that's one of the distinctions that came out in oral argument, because if the law is just about conduct, public camping, and if that law is consistently enforced, I don't see there being anything in the Constitution that prohibits that. But if it's about status, if it's just being enforced against homeless people, right, or people who are temporarily unhoused, well, then it becomes a law that's about status and not conduct. And then that is, I would argue, not okay. And so, like Justice Sotomayor pointed out, well, you know, the cops in this case said that, you know, yeah, if someone's just kind of like hanging out with their family on a blanket, that sort of thing, looking up at the stars, no, we're not going to bother them. But if it's a homeless guy, well, then yeah, we will right away. That's a problem, basically, right? And so,
right, and I think Sotomayor's argument though is a little disingenuous in that I think some of this goes to the permanency of the camping, right? I think if someone's out looking at the stars and falls asleep on a blanket, or she also said, well, if you're sitting at the beach and you fall asleep, you know, I think that's different, obviously, than
yes and no, because I would say that you might have a point, but that's not how the law is written. And so I would argue that the law is written just says you can't sleep with a blanket or a pillow or a cardboard box for any kind of covering. Now, if the law said you can't do that over X period of time, then maybe. But as it is written, I would argue that it is overly broad, and so therefore doesn't pass constitutional muster as written. And so in that sense, it gives too much discretion for, you know, people say, well, you know, when some sort of sleeping is okay and others isn't, I think that's really problematic. But I also think that, you know, there are some justices who seem to be inclined to not want to go with a constitutional argument at all. Like Justice Gorsuch said, well, what about the necessity defense? And that's basically the idea, is that it's kind of an old common law thing saying that, well, you do something or you don't do something because you don't have an alternative. It's kind of like duress in that sense. And so what Gorsuch is saying, do we even need to worry about this? Because if someone gets fined under this and they say, hey, I didn't have any other option, well, that necessity defense would mean that they wouldn't have to essentially pay that fine, or that would be a defense at least against that sort of thing. Right.
And they wouldn't have the money to pay the fine anyway. But.
Right. But and now the counter to that is, well, just the hassle of being able to then the ability to know that there's a defense and all that would just basically have the effect of pushing these homeless people somewhere else, which is kind of what Grants Pass wanted to do in the first place. Right. And that's kind of a, let's make them somebody else's problem, essentially. And now Justice Jackson, though, you know, she pointed out that, hey, the state of Oregon just passed a law, I think like a year or two ago, saying that something like anyone who's charged with violating a locality's camping ban does have an affirmative defense here. And so for that reason, specifically, not just the general thing that Gorsuch raised, but specifically, they don't have to consider that here. And so, you know, she says, what about constitutional avoidance, right? I mean, so isn't our principle supposed to be that we don't have to look at the constitutionality if there's another possible way of resolving it because the state's addressed it? In other words, Justice Jackson is saying, hey, guys, what about we exercise some judicial restraint on this issue? And I don't know, that didn't seem like an unreasonable point to make.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Well, no, I'm all for constitutional avoidance, but I think part of the problem is the Ninth Circuit's ruling sort of created sort of a new right that didn't really exist before, right? It's not as if, and I think that's the bigger issue. They sort of created a, I guess it's not really a substantive due process, right? I guess it's more a right against cruel and unusual punishment, but it sort of sounds in that same sort of, this is a right that hasn't really been recognized before. And again, if you go back to something like, say, necessity or something like, well, then that changes the equation, right? In terms of what's being considered, what facts are being considered, yet actually have to show necessity. And I think that might not be terrible, actually, from a public policy view, right? But there's also just a practical problem of what do you do? How do you get someone in court to raise their necessity defense if they aren't arrested?
I mean, it's just a really kind of thorny issue, and I agree with you. Some of the hypotheticals are sort of going too far, but oftentimes that's what hypotheticals do. They take a line of reasoning to its logical or crazy conclusion, right? I mean, at one point, Justice Jackson said, well, what if Grants Pass just said, well, we're going to execute the homeless people? Would that be an Eighth Amendment violation?
Right.
And I love the attorney maybe. And then Justice Gorsuch, I think it was, said, why don't you just say yes?
Exactly. The answer to that is always yes.
We can't execute the homeless. Yes. But I mean, the fundamental problem, and this is why there are people from the left and the right who are involved in, running cities. What are we supposed to do? And there is no good answer to this, because right now I think we have something like, last count, 650,000 homeless or so, and it's a growing problem. And we're seeing a lot of that, especially in the West. And it at a basic level, it's, well, before we get to that, I mean, how do you see this playing out, this particular case? How do you think the court should decide this before we get to the kind of issue that's driving these sort of things?
I think the court will come out and say that cities have a reasonable right to police, exercise their police power and clean up homeless encampments. I think they might cabin that in terms of, there has to be more than just sleeping overnight, right? I think they may have said there has to be a perhaps stronger showing, but I think they end up ruling with the cities.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's a distinction they can make between, say, one guy or a couple of people sleeping overnight on a bench or under a tree, what have you, in a doorway, as opposed to an encampment. Because I think you can make some reasonable safety and security raise issues that cities would have about that. But if you say, well, it just doesn't look good to have this guy sleeping here, but if he's not bothering anyone, he doesn't have anywhere else to go, there's no shelter, I don't know if that's compelling enough of an argument for the city to basically be able to fine that person for having nowhere else to go.
Yeah. And again, I'm still a little troubled by the whole shelter argument, right? Because that's sort of something that in a lot of ways the Ninth Circuit just sort of made up. And imposes a really weird sort of, one for one. And can you, do you have to track the beds available at any given night, and how close do they have to be to where the person was? And, there are some homeless people who don't want to be in homeless shelters. Even if the shelters were available, they would not want to be there, because in some cases the shelters frown on you bringing in your drugs and so forth.
Or they require you to go to church services, or they don't let you smoke, or you have mental health problems and you just can't be in a shelter for whatever reason, because they can't handle you. There are all kinds of reasons, but your point, I agree with.
So that's what I'm saying, is the Ninth Circuit, I think, created sort of an unworkable test that or an unworkable right, and imposed an unfunded mandate on these cities.
In a lot of ways, it's not really frustrating to me, but it seems to me there was a point at which this would have been handled, not exactly in an extra legal way, but in a way where you could see the police, the officer saying to the homeless person, listen, there's a shelter over X. They've got some beds. They'll take you there. If they knew there wasn't a bed, it was like, well, just let them stay there because there's not a bed tonight. I mean, oftentimes the problem with trying to specifically codify all of these weird little idiosyncratic things that could happen into law is you run into situations like this. You're trying to make a rule that fits for everyone all the time. And oftentimes that just doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I think, look, I would say it would be hard enough to codify this through an actual legislative, codification type program. It's much worse when an appellate court just makes up the rule.
Yeah. And I see your point there for sure. And so I think you're right. I do think that the court will give some sort of, well, certainly more guidance to cities and make it more workable for cities. Though I don't know that.
I can see this statute being struck down.
Yes, this is what I'm saying.
Saying that well, this doesn't work, but, you know, we still recognize that cities have a, you know, such and such right to exercise their police powers to, you know, for the good of the citizens and sanitation and safety and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And sort of give cities a roadmap for how to rewrite the statute.
Yeah. And I think that would be a good thing. And certainly there are plenty of folks on the left and the right who understand the importance of that. But, you know, getting back to that more fundamental issue, that the growing homelessness problem, it's really in large part a problem of lack of affordable housing and lack of housing costs. And to give folks a sense of this, I was pouring through a bunch of data in preparation for this. Over the last decade, according to the Federal Reserve, median house sale prices increased nearly 52%. Right? The Census Bureau says that over that same period, average new residential construction costs are up over around 71%. And this is a period where, by my calculations, median household income is only up around 13%. So when you have more and more people unable to afford a place to stay, what's going to happen? You're going to have people who are going to be homeless, basically. And that's the fundamental problem. And it's not a problem that's necessarily easy to solve. Now, there are some people who are saying, well, why don't we just pay their rent? And actually, someone did the calculations. I did the calculations. If you take the median rent, which is in January, roughly $1,379 a month. And you paid that for every homeless person, all 650,000, which is a nice round number, around $11 billion a year. We could do that. That's, you know, that's what we just gave to Taiwan, a little more than that, whatever, you know. But the problem with that is there aren't necessarily the housing units for those people anyway, where they're at. And there are all kinds of problems with building those housing units. There are zoning issues, construction cost issues. There are, you know, this is oftentimes a local problem. And so this is not the sort of problem that you can just fix overnight or even in a few years, the massive housing shortage that we have. I mean, this is the most visible aspect of it, but this is something that's been building for a while and that there aren't any good, quick solutions in the pipeline for.
We hope you enjoyed this preview of our supporters' exclusive midweek show. If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter. Supporters get ad-free access to all of our shows, membership in our Politics Guys Discord group where you can join in on the conversation, and other benefits at different levels of support. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/politicsguys. You can also support us through Venmo, we're @politicsguys, or through PayPal. You'll find all of our support links in the show notes, as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to become a financial supporter, that's not a problem. Just send me an email at mike@politicsguys.com, and I'll be happy to get that set up for you.
This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.